All right, Brett Ciancia from Pick Six Previews is coming up here in a little bit. The Zach Attack and our discussion about Illinois winning a game last night over Chattanooga shut out the Mocs. He says Bielema was his guy when Pelini got fired, and then when Riley got fired, he wanted Bielema.
There are a lot of folks that liked old B2.
Well, the story is out there that Bielema contacted Eichhorst to plug Paul Christ before Riley got hired.
Yeah.
And Eichhorst was like, okay, you know, because of their Wisconsin connection. What if Bielema would have said, hey, what about me? What would Eichhorst have done?
I tell you, the whole Paul Christ, Wisconsin, the ties, the family connections here with Greco.
Yep. It's wild.
It is wild.
Where if he would have gotten the job, you would have, it makes sense.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like, that is wild.
Yeah. Well, and now, what, 7 years later, he's at Wisconsin. And pretty important game coming up tomorrow in Columbus.
Yeah. It's like, what's the connection with Wisconsin and Westside? Oh, there definitely is one.
All right, let's welcome in our good friend. It was great to see him in person last week. Hope everybody enjoyed. We got a chance to meet him or even in Lincoln. Brett Ciancia from Pick Six Previews. Good morning, sir. Have you recovered from your weekend in Omaha and Lincoln?
Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was really great to meet you guys, be on site at Jones Bros. It was great to meet a lot of your listeners and so many Husker fans. Again, thanks so much to everybody involved. It's a town that loves college football, and that's perfect with me. I mean, you guys match my high passion for the sport, and that's rare. So really loved it out there. I'll return when the next coach is in and has this thing turned around. I think it'll happen. The fan passion won't let it get any worse. And, you all deserve better out there, and I'll be back soon.
What, did you ever at any point get the sense that this was a team that only had one win and at that time was 16-31 in the last 5 years? Is the passion, it's, you don't even know what the record is.
Right, exactly. And, that game started out 7-0, and that place was one of the loudest I'd ever heard a stadium. I was down on the sideline. It was rocking. There was a third down stop, I believe, and then a touchdown by Nebraska. That place was incredible. And then, it kind of shifted on that 80-yard run by Dylan Gabriel where there was missed tackles. There was bad pursuit angles and some poor effort, it looked like, when you watch the replay. And then it was like, you know, the reality sunk in. But, no, the fans were incredible all weekend. It stands out because it's so universal. Everybody talking Husker football. I mean, I'm from the East Coast, and everyone has their pro sports teams or their different colleges that they cheer for. But to have one spot where it's all unified, all for one big team, that was really cool.
What did you think of Oklahoma?
Well, yeah, what stands out to me is their defense because forever they'd always had the offense and they'd always been putting up points. And for some years they were high tempo like they flashed this year. But now this defense by Brent Venables, he was able to reshape it overnight, leading the country in sacks and tackles for loss. And they were getting after Casey Thompson. And, they looked the part as a serious Big 12 contender and then potentially playoff contender when you look at their schedule now.
Hey, so if you're kind of looking at levels of surprise, I want to go right to the Big Ten, and obviously the West is off to a little bit of a slow start. But I want to jump over to Penn State because I feel like what they did against Auburn isn't getting enough. And I don't love Auburn, but the way that they beat them up and the physicality in which they played, he's got three or four, really good freshmen playing early. He's always recruited well. How close is Franklin, in your opinion, to being on to something here in the next couple for the next couple of years?
Yeah, I'm glad you framed it that way because with Auburn, yeah, I'm not very impressed either. I had them picked last in the SEC West. Well, it did feel odd to do so, but they're going through quite a transition. With that said, they still have strength in the trenches. So to see Penn State match up physically with them, that was what held Penn State back was their offensive line ever since those sanction years a decade ago. So to see them establish the run, to see them, Nicholas Singleton, the freshman out of Governor Mifflin here in eastern Pennsylvania, to see him go off. He's the most yards through three games since Larry Johnson there in 2002. So to see them establish the run game on a SEC roster, a five-star roster, that was impressive. And to your point, yeah, it's exactly what he set out to do. He called it dominate the state in recruiting. And all of these guys that are breaking out, they're Pennsylvania guys. So I think Penn State fans are proud of that, and to see them get a huge W like that, vaulted into the top 15, they'll continue to rise. Now, they have a tough three-game stretch coming up. It's Michigan, Minnesota, and Ohio State, and that's really going to define the season. But so far, so good for Penn State.
Hey, let's stay in the Big Ten, because there are some interesting crossover games, but I want to stay in the East Division, which is the beast, and the East Division is off to a really, really good start. Maryland and Michigan both are unbeaten. Now, if you go back and look, if you watch the SMU-Maryland game, you're wondering, how did SMU not win that game? But they were their own worst enemy. Michigan has rolled through everybody they have played. They've been great offensively. They've been great defensively. It looks like they picked up right where they left off last year. I think the only time that Michigan has lost in the series, Brett, is that was Brady Hoke. When Brady Hoke lost in the Big House to Maryland in 14, I believe, they were like, you got to go. The line is a 16.5-17. The game's in Ann Arbor. What's your thoughts on Michigan? I mean, Michigan in particular through three games, and then also this game against Maryland, who this is kind of a test to see where the Terps are.
Yeah, I think with Michigan, they opened up with the easiest schedule in America. I think it's actually dead last, 131 out of 131, with Hawaii and UConn in there, and really, really slow out of the gates. But to their credit, they did exactly what they're supposed to do. I mean, they have the highest yards per play differential, the highest scoring differential. They really blew them out, which you'd want to see. They did it with two different quarterbacks. So, you know, with all that said, they are still a mystery. This is their first Power 5 test, the first conference test. Maryland's going to test their corners in the secondary with Tagovailoa, a great quarterback, a really underrated receiving core. I mean, this group doesn't get enough credit. There's former five stars. There's, I think, a former Husker mixed in there. You know, Florida's starting number one receiver last year, Jacob Copeland, added in on top of that. So they're gonna test them. But I still like Michigan to win. I think that overall roster talent, and I think they win that one. But yeah, I'm excited to see both teams because it's kind of their first Power 5 test, and we'll get to learn a lot about both teams.
Yeah, more obviously, all eyes on Wisconsin's offense. They've got a tough one with Ohio State. But how good do you think Wisconsin is defensively to give themselves a chance to stay inside that big number of 18?
Yeah, I think if you're a Wisconsin fan and you're trying to cover that 18 points and really keep this competitive, you look at Notre Dame's formula, because that's what slowed Ohio State down in week one, kept it within a score for most of the game, kept it, I think, 11 points most of the game within striking range. And I think Wisconsin and Notre Dame are similar styles of play, offensively and, I guess, defensively. I mean, Jim Leonard, one of the best in the game. He's proven that year after year. This is just another unit he's got. And they reload every year, too. It's a lot of new faces, but it's kind of just the same Wisconsin style every year. So that'll keep them in the ball game, I think. And, you know, offensively, get Braylon Allen, get him the ball, get established the run game. Graham Mertz, he took a step forward last week in the pass game. So hopefully he rides that momentum into Columbus. But huge test, and you know, that Washington State game is a head scratcher, but I think they lost three turnovers in that way. Like, they lost the margin minus three, and they outgained the Cougars. So I don't want to call that a fluke, but that was a weird one.
Does Mel Tucker get right, or does PJ Fleck ride the momentum through East Lansing into the top of the West Division?
I like Minnesota here.
I
and I was kind of selling Michigan State back in the preseason. I had Penn State above them. That was kind of a big 50-50 call amongst the preseason magazines, but
I raised an eyebrow at it, so that shows you how much I know.
I think this is a big test for that, though. So it's a field goal game. Minnesota, again, is one of those teams that hasn't had the Power 5 test yet. I guess you can call Colorado, but Colorado's probably the worst Power 5 in America right now. So a real test for PJ Fleck's bunch. And Michigan State reeling off of a physical Washington game. I remember Damon, I think it was you and Lee last week on the show.
Yeah, going back and forth, yeah.
That was a tough contested game, and here they are, another physical matchup again. So I'm going Minnesota to win it. And, you know, not so much a knock on Mel Tucker. I think he's doing great. It's just that, you know, it's a tough schedule here in September.
So, Brett, let me ask you, because Sharpie is the president of the Kansas Fan Club, and he says that they are officially back after this weekend as a national power, and he's not talking about basketball.
Wow.
To me, Duke seems pretty tricky because I know that they can score. Should be points of plenty. Does 7 seem right to you?
I'd look at this more like a field goal game because of the home field, or a pick 'em. My numbers agree. It's more in that 3-point range. So to see it at 7 is impressive. It's a lot of respect for Kansas. Is Kansas back? I think so, man. It's their first sellout in a decade. They sold out their stadium there. It's getting national attention. When you're talking football teams, Kansas and Duke, more basketball programs. Last time they both started 3-0 together in the same year was 1952. So very rare waters here. Kansas, they have the great offense. We talked about it last week, and Jalen Daniels, Devin Neal, they're scoring in bunches. Now with Duke, they're going up against Mike Elko's defense. I had a chance to interview him, the former A&M coordinator, Notre Dame coordinator, runs that 4-2-5, very aggressive. So I'm really excited for that chess match in a game I don't think many are talking about, but it's very intriguing to see these teams undefeated.
Are you surprised at all how tight the Notre Dame-North Carolina line is?
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of Notre Dame, quite honestly. I don't know anymore. That's one team is a mystery to me. They looked really strong against Ohio State, like we talked about. They matched up physically, and then, of course, they lost a couple receivers. Their quarterback Buckner's out, and then came out really flat against Marshall and Cal, both toss-up games that they lost. And so, yeah, with UNC, they're hot and cold themselves. They score in bunches at times, and then they go cold, and they give up a lot of sacks. And I don't know if the defense is quite there yet, so I'm staying away from that one. I know you can't pick them all, at least betting-wise. I wouldn't advise on that one.
Yeah, it seems like the wrong team's favorite, and maybe it's just because folks know that this game's in College Station, and they were impressive against Miami. Not sure what you thought of Miami in its totality this early in the season, but it seems like Arkansas is the better team, and I know they struggled against Missouri State.
Yeah, the Arkansas-Missouri State game had some weirdness to it. It was Bobby Petrino coming back to Fayetteville. There was all that drama about 5 or 10 years ago there, and they jumped out to a quick 17-0 lead on Arkansas and kind of stunned them. But credit Arkansas for rallying. They pulled away. They won by, I think, 11 at the end, or it was 17. They pulled away. With A&M, that game was more of a toss-up. I think that Miami was right there with them. And you look at red zone, they couldn't execute in the red zone. They stuck to field goals. If they cash in a touchdown here or there, that's a completely different game, a tied game or something like that. So I look at that as more of a 50-50. They went toe-to-toe with A&M in College Station. So I'm not ready to sell Miami. I still have them as my favorite in the Coastal. I think they're still a legit top 20 team and want to see more of them. I'm going Arkansas here. And I agree with you. They're the better team. They have the more dynamic offense. Their one weakness is their pass defense, their secondary, but A&M's not really going to test that too much from what we've seen. So I go Arkansas.
A&M, fewer red zone trips than the Iowa offense. Sticking in the SEC, when Spurrier and Fulmer used to be matched up, this was a fun rivalry because they were both usually top 10, at least top 5, maybe in occasions, and they didn't like each other. This has been a one-sided rivalry, so to speak. I think Florida has won 16 of the last 17. They won 5 in a row. But it is at checkered kneeling. Before we get into Tennessee, and this factors into it as well, have you been able to figure out where the Anthony Richardson that played against Utah went?
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, he came out really well against Utah. I think it was 3 rushing touchdowns. Had them 3 for 3 in the red zone. We just talked red zone in the Miami game. That's what defined the Utah-Florida game was red zone. And he was running all over the place, crafty in the pocket, extending plays. That's gone away, and I think he still is without a passing touchdown through 3 games. In fact, he's got more tackles after he's thrown a pick than he has touchdowns. So very odd statistical thing down there, but I think he's still a strong quarterback. I like Tennessee here, though, and Tennessee by at least the score. It's weird to see Tennessee favored so much here. It's the highest they've been favored over Florida in 50 years or something since way back before Spurrier. And yeah, you're right. It was always the kickoff to the season. It was always the third week of September, really a kickoff to conference play nationally, an early conference matchup. I'm glad it's back. I think it was Spurrier that joked, hey, you can't spell UT without, or you can't spell Citrus Bowl without UT, a knock to how they couldn't break through the BCS era. But I like Tennessee here. It's going to be one of the biggest home games they've had in a long time. And it's about time they write the course. They're going to be a top 10 team next time we talk.
Quietly until Joe Klatt said so. Jonathan Smith was probably the best hire of the 2017 coaching carousel. Shades of 2008 when Carroll, as a top 10 ranked team, dropped one to the Beavers.
Well, I don't want to give away any spoilers here, but take a look at Helmet Board coming out. I think I'm going to go all in on the Beavers. You're going to hear that chainsaw noise on third downs up there. Reese's Stadium gets electric. It's going to have all kinds of Pac-12 after dark vibes to it. No, I'm going Oregon State. They're a very sound team. They're not going to beat themselves. They have a very creative, dynamic run game. They're going to establish that against USC's front seven. And now the key is that their defense. Trent Bray is a lot more aggressive this year than they were last year under the old coordinator. They're going to confuse USC's offense a bit. And that USC-Stanford game, I don't want to let USC off the hook here. Stanford had two scores going in. They fumbled at the goal line and threw a pick in the end zone. And I don't want to do what-ifs, but that ended up being a 13-point game. And you cash in those, and you're talking a more competitive game. So I like Oregon State here. And if you look at Vegas on this, it's the most bet-on game by a factor of three. Three times more bets than any other game in the country. And I think a lot of that's on the Beavers. It's pushing the line down.
Yeah, it's down to like 5.5.
Yeah, it's getting pounded. So, yeah, that's one to keep an eye on. I can't wait for that one.
Stick in the Pac-12. What's your thoughts on what DeBoer is doing at Washington? Because they come off the emotion of Michigan State, where Husky Stadium felt like the glory days of UW. Now they get Stanford, which has had a week to prepare, and you're trying to figure out who Stanford is. I think they're better than they've been the last few years. What's your thoughts on what DeBoer has been able to do in a short amount of time in Seattle?
Yeah, well, that actually kind of connected to what's going on in Nebraska, because in my head I was thinking, if you're a Nebraska fan, look to what Washington has done so quickly in a coaching change and gotten them back to national relevancy and a ranked team and just competent competitive football. And he really did it overnight, because their offense last year was one of the worst in the country. They had struggled for years on offense. Always had the defense, but the offense struggled. And you hire a really great tactician and a really great schemer with DeBoer, and overnight they're putting up 40 points a game. And yeah, the transfer portal certainly helps. And if you have connections there, like he brought in Penix, his former quarterback from Indiana, that certainly helps. But yeah, very impressed with him, and they're now a contender in the Pac-12. I had them second behind Oregon in the North, and now I think that has stood true. It's probably them two and Oregon State you can throw in the North Division. So impressive there. It shows you how quickly you can fix a program. And then against Stanford, 14.5 does seem high, though. I came away liking Stanford more than I thought I would back in August. They showed a new offense. They're running that Wake Forest slow mesh RPO. EJ Smith is a solid freshman back, and a lot to like from this team. So it looks like they fixed their trenches a bit, and 14.5 does seem high.
Joking this morning, a former KU play-by-play guy on one side of me. The other side is the president of the KU fan club. They've got the big one with ISU looming, but does ISU come in off a win against Baylor?
Yeah, this is one where I'm thinking the wrong team's favored. I'm going Baylor here. They're getting 2.5 or 3 at some places. I just think that, yeah, with Baylor, I'll go give them somewhat of a mulligan going into Provo. That place was rocking 2 weekends ago. But you still have one of the best offensive lines and best defensive line combos in the country. Dave Aranda, we've spoken about. I really like him as a defensive mind and a leader of a program. So I think they get it fixed here, and I think they're going to win straight up. But I do want to see Iowa State again. They were in that Iowa slugfest. I want to see them in another ball game and see what we have here. But I'm going Baylor.
Great stuff, Brett. It was great seeing you and meeting your fiance. I hope she had a great time. I think she might be more passionate about college football than you are. Or
yeah, Miss Previews loves college football. it was great to meet you guys too. Yeah, she loves it. So yeah, thanks for having us, and we'll talk again next Friday. Enjoy the games, guys.
Hey, great stuff, Brett. That's Brett Cianza from Pick Six Previews off of his trip to Lincoln last week. Aranda and Campbell. I'll tell you what, I'll talk to them before the game.
Yeah, you do that,
and see what they have to say. What is that, 11 a.m.? At least you can find that game. We just talked about the Pac-12. Can somebody just put the Pac-12 out of its misery? I mean, we got the UCLA stuff yesterday. Come on.
Well,
what are we doing out there? Is the Big Ten just going in to take the whole conference? I mean, just bring everybody in.
Giving the UC region something to think about.
I mean, what are we? I mean, maybe the Big 12 goes in there and just takes over the Pac-12. But that's a mess.
Oh.
That's a mess. But probably not surprising considering California and the Pac-12 and everything that's going on and trying to find some traction. But they got some good games this weekend, but you don't hear about them. I mean, USC-Oregon State could be an interesting game. I don't know. USC might be on a whole different level.
I still like USC in that one. I mean, the public's got to win every now and again to keep playing, but it's a lot of public sway in that one.
A lot of Williams to Addison. in that game. Coming up here in a little bit, Lee Sterling. Now, we're going to get deep into some numbers as Lee from Paramount Sports will join us next hour. Mike Sauter, we still got Mike Schaefer and Matt Verzel before we're done on a Football Friday Fiesta on 1620 The Zone.